beach easy.
I just always imagined, like, you know these movies where you see, like, this woman's in her car and she's, like, blasting her music and she's just having, like, a great time going down the freeway, like, the wind's in her hair. And it just looked like literally the epitome of freedom to me. And I just knew that I would never have that. And it was devastating, like, absolutely devastating.
Welcome to Life's a Beach and Then You Die. From personal growth and self-discovery to challenges and victories, we discuss it all. Join us as we dive into the extraordinary stories of ordinary people all the way to the end.
Welcome to Life's a Beach and Then You Die. I'm your host, Julie Ellis, and today I'm joined with Heather Edwards, the president of the local chapter of the Foundation Fighting Blindness. She was born and raised here in Myrtle Beach and was born with a visual impairment.
When I was about 8 years old, I was diagnosed with a form of cone dystrophy. And to put that in layman's terms, it's very similar to macular degeneration. So I'm very light sensitive, photophobia. I wear very dark sunglasses whenever I go outside. I have partial color vision, so partially colorblind, and my corrected vision has stayed around 2200 my whole life. So when I go to the eye doctor, we pretty much do the eye chart and I say E and then we leave. And that's pretty much the whole event.
So Heather, were you born with this condition?
I was born with it, but interestingly enough, I wasn't as affected when I was younger, so I do think it's something that I'm becoming a little more sensitive to as time goes on. When I look back at home videos, I didn't really have to wear sunglasses. Like our first trip to Disney World when I was around six, I was just running around like a normal kid, really didn't have any kind of indication that anything was happening until I got to, I believe, second grade. One of my teachers actually brought in my parents and told them that she was very concerned for me because I was holding the book very close to my face to be able to read. And that's when I got sent to the Storm Eye Institute in Charleston and got diagnosed around 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, when I was younger, I had a great childhood. I spent a lot of time outside. I would say a pretty idealistic, normal childhood.
Mm-hmm. So when you were 8 years old and they finally diagnosed an issue with your sight, how could you see then? Did lights bother you? You read? Could you see? Can you see me?
Like, I can see you. Yeah. I can't see if you were to wink at me right now. Maybe I couldn't see like the details. Well, now you turned your head, so I know you winked. But it's those subtle cues, you know, like maybe I can't see the details of someone's face, but I can almost feel the energy of someone. So even though you might be far away, and if you glance at me and you smile, I can almost feel your smile coming at me.
I love that.
Yeah. So it's been, again, like an adaptation where I've almost learned to depend less on my sight and depend more on intuition, sound, smell, energy, which, you know, I know not everyone believes in like auras or things like that, mm-hmm. but I truly do. I feel like I've learn to pick up on those things.
Mm-hmm.
But now I feel like it's a little more stable. But when I was younger, I was very sensitive to the fluorescent lights that we have in public schools.
Mm-hmm.
And I still to this day will die by this. But like, I just don't think that's conducive to anyone's mental health. Like having fluorescent lights in a public school, it feels very institutional. And they're just so bright. I just don't think anyone really needs that, to be quite honest.
How did they bother you? It was just too bright and made you want to close your eyes? And
too bright. And when things get too bright for me, sometimes I get migraines like in between my eyes, and then I just get nauseous, and I see kind of like stars in my eyes sometimes, like floaters, almost like when you get your picture taken and the flash is on, and then you see the flash afterwards. It's something kind of akin to that. But it can be debilitating to the point where, even to this day, sometimes if I'm exposed to bright light and that happens, I just have to go into my bed in a dark room, shut my eyes, put on my healing frequencies and just go to sleep.
Right.
And just hope for the best when I wake up. It's been proved, like, every time it's worked for me. But when I was younger, I didn't know those coping mechanisms. So it was just difficult not being able to communicate this with adults and not really knowing how you feel when you're younger. You don't really know your words when you're younger or how to describe something you're going mm-hmm. through. So it was almost like it was more of an after the fact thing. Like I couldn't describe what I was going through in the moment, but I could describe it afterwards to someone.
Mm-hmm.
And adults didn't really get it. How could anyone get it? You know,
right.
You really don't know what someone's individual experience is when they're going through something like that. So it was right. difficult to be able to tell people. And of course, that's all adults want to do when you're younger is know what you're going through and how you feel. And so it was a little frustrating
and
to not
to help
be
you.
Able. Yeah. And yeah. I didn't know what I needed at that point. I didn't
right.
really know what the answer was or how to solve this issue. So it was a little frustrating.
Because of her visual impairment, Heather had other struggles that most kids didn't have to worry about. And it caused her to miss out on milestones that most people take for granted, like learning how to drive.
One thing that's been particularly challenging along those lines for you is the fact that you've never been able to drive.
Right. Never.
What was that like when your friends were getting driver's license? Did you feel like crushed, angry?
Yes.
What was the feeling?
All of the emotions, all of the negative emotions you can yeah. think of is what I felt.
Because talk about feeling powerless.
Yeah.
You know, you can't go from point A to point B without relying on other people. That must have been hard for someone like you.
Yeah. It was. Yeah. And I think you're really like getting to a good point here is my type A personality, you know, I had to let go of it, but it's like, I didn't want to, you know, like I just held such resentment and anger. And like, you know, this was around the same time of the 11th grade slump. And so it was like, I was just getting hit from all sides at that point in my life. And no wonder I was depressed, you know, like it was a recipe for disaster. And yeah, I watched every single one of my friends get their license. And it was, well, I'll back up and say I had some of the best friends you could have asked for. And they were so conscious about how they treated me. They would always offer to pick me up. They would try and include me in as many things as possible. And I'm so grateful for that. But, you know, the internal struggle didn't make it any easier, unfortunately. And I just always imagined, like, you know, these movies where you see like this woman's in her car and she's like blasting her music and she's just having like a great time going down the freeway, like the wind's in her hair. And it just looked like literally the epitome of freedom to me. And I just knew that I would never have that. And it was devastating, like absolutely devastating. And again, like my parents took so much time out of their life to drive me where I wanted to go. I was very involved in school, like extracurricular activities. So I do thank them so much for doing that for me and taking that time. But it still didn't make it any easier, you
yeah.
know? Like, it doesn't matter how much support you have, knowing that everyone else has something that you want and you can never have it is really hard to get over. Even letting things go, like, that's still one of the things I struggle with is,
mm-hmm.
like, that almost envy and like jealousy, which I know are terrible traits to have, but it's the one part of my life that like I just can't seem to let it go some days.
Driving isn't just about feeling free. For Heather, it impacts every part of her life, including where she can live and work.
Pretty much my whole life up until my current job, I currently work remote, which has been such a blessing for someone who can't drive. I don't have that anxiety anymore about finding a ride or like, what if the bus is late? What if this person calls out sick? I mean, I would literally, my stomach would be in knots like every morning, every afternoon. Sometimes I would stay late at work just so I could watch the Uber prices go down from the surge price and like, because I didn't want to have to pay that. And it was a whole thing. So I tried to, as much as possible, live near where I worked if I could. And so my first three jobs out of college, I would apply for the job and look for apartments at the exact same time. So I would have like a spreadsheet going of, here's my type A spreadsheets, but I would have a spreadsheet going of what job and then what apartment. And I would have to like sync it up perfectly where, okay, I'll start on this day, I'll move in on this day. And like, how stressful is that to like move into a new apartment and then start a new job like 2 days later, you know? Or I would usually try and give myself a few days, but you can't take much time because you need the income. So it was so stressful to try and like coordinate those together. And then the job that I had previous to this one, I didn't have that, and I had to rely on people to get to work. And it worked out where, again, my parents worked close to out here, and they would drive me to work. And then I had great friends who would pick me up and take me home because we all worked on the same schedule and I was on their way home. And I am just so blessed to know the people that I do. But again, didn't make it any easier because I wanted to, what if I wanted to go grab lunch one day? Like, I'm stuck where I am until I have someone that offers to take me somewhere, unless I can walk.
Heather is grateful for her friends and family who were there for her, but she did struggle, particularly in her adolescent years.
High school was so hard. It was probably the hardest time of my life, I would say. Also, just being a ninth grader and being thrown into a school with people who are 4 years older than you was just such a shock in the first place.
Mm-hmm, it is.
Because you really don't have that. You know, we go second or third, fourth, fifth are in the same school, and then sixth, seventh, eighth are in the same school, and then ninth, 10th, 11th, 12th. It was like a whole nother group just got introduced. And it was just shocking for everyone, I think. But I felt so self-conscious in high school, trying to find my group, where I fit in. I had a lot of bullying happen in high school. And again, I'm so grateful for the friends that I made in middle school because they stuck up for me a lot and really had my back. And if I didn't have that, I don't know what would have happened. Gosh. I'm glad I don't have to know what happened. But yeah, 12th graders are a little mean to ninth graders sometimes. Mm-hmm. And at this point in my life, I don't have any hatred or like negativity against these people because like who really knows what you're saying in 12th grade? You know what I mean? Like your brain is not fully developed at that point. And right. Like I think people make fun of things that they don't understand. And I think that's really what it boiled down to is like their parents never sat down and had the conversation with them that like some kids are different than mm-hmm. them. And I think that really showed whenever mm-hmm. I got to high school. So yeah, it would just be like, you know, the mall was a big event, and maybe it still is, I don't know. But it was a big event. What you would go to the mall on a Friday night and walk around with your friends and see the hot guys and try and get their attention, you know. So whenever I would go to the mall with my friends, some of the 12th graders would be there, and they would follow me around the mall and mock me in the mall and, like, follow me around with their eyes squinted because I do tend to squint whenever there's bright light. And I finally had this one great friend who went up to them one night, and he was like, do you even know what you're doing? Like, why are you even doing that? You don't even know anything about her. Like, what has she ever done to you? And they didn't have an answer. And I think it literally, like, shocked their brain because they just stared at him like a deer in the headlights. Like, wow, no one's ever questioned me being a bully before. You know, right. Like, why do I do what I do? And it's so... Ugh, I just wish that we could, like, eradicate all bullying. But I do think it builds character in a way. So, like, I'm not a proponent of bullying, but I'm almost glad it happened in a way because it taught me how to deal with people. I mean, there are even adults who have that sense of insecurity. And, like, it didn't end in high school. You know, that was probably the hardest just because I wasn't sure of who I was at that point, and it made me start to question who I was. And kind of sent me down like a rabbit hole, just like a downward spiral of who am I? Who do I want to be? What is my identity? And that's just such a difficult time for anyone that I did become really depressed around 11th grade and ended up getting on some antidepressants. And a lot of my friends ended up leaving for the academy the AAST. I think it's still there today. And I ended up being left at the public school with no friends. Mm-hmm. And so on top of being different, now the people who did accept me for who I was, they were gone.
Oh.
And so I had to try and rebuild relationships with other people. So I did end up finding a little niche of like just weirdos. And like, I think they wouldn't even mind me calling them that at this point. And they were just so welcoming because they were weird. I was weird. We were weird together. It was great.
Yeah.
But it did take me a while to find that. And in the meantime, I became, this sounds so stereotypical, but I became friends with the librarian. I would eat my lunch in the library and like read books. And it was literally like something out of like Freaks and Geeks or something like that. But yeah, so it was really hard in 11th grade. And then my senior year, I actually ended up going to the academy myself with all my friends. And the academy was just so full of interesting, diverse people that I felt more at home than I had ever felt. I only had my senior year there. And if I could ever change anything about my life, I think it would be going for my junior and my senior year, just so I could have gotten, I could have not gone through the 11th grade slumps that I went through. Because once I got there my senior year, I pretty much dumped all my depression medication down the drain. And I was like, I'm not depressed anymore. It wasn't me, it was my environment.
Today, Heather has a very active life. She works in finance, is a certified yoga teacher, and is president of the Foundation Fighting Blindness here in Myrtle Beach.
So I've been in the role for about a year now. So just to back up a little, the Foundation Fighting Blindness is a national nonprofit, and they have chapters in all the states, sometimes multiple chapters in the state, depending on how big it is. And all the chapters are led and managed by volunteers. So I am a volunteer, and I was approached about a year ago to be the chapter president because the chapter had kind of dismantled during COVID. As you can imagine, like not many fundraisers or like gatherings are happening during COVID. So my job was to rebuild the chapter and raise awareness about the Foundation Fighting Blindness in our local community. So this past year has taught me so much about grassroots organizations. I just pretty much would give my spiel to anyone who would listen. And I'm so fortunate that we live in such a giving community that we do in Myrtle Beach. So I've actually partnered with like Neighbor to Neighbor. We are another local nonprofit here. We actually have partnered together so that they tell people who might have a visual impairment about the Foundation Fighting Blindness and like send them our way so that we can support them throughout their journey. The foundation works to find cures for inherited retinal diseases, but it also gives people a support system, which I'm just so happy that that exists because when I was 8 or 16 or 22, like I could have really used that, you know?
Right, because you didn't know life. Anybody who is visually impaired.
I didn't meet my first visually impaired person until I was 18, and I went to a scholarship, like a conference where we got scholarships, and that was the first time I ever met anyone who had a visual impairment other than myself, was at like 18. And it was mind-blowing. Like, all these people were walking around with their white canes, and I'd never seen that before. It was just shocking. And I really didn't know anyone in the Myrtle Beach community who was visually impaired until last year. And that to me, is more shocking than anything. Because I know they're out there. I know that I'm not the only person. But the hard thing about visual impairments is you don't know someone has one sometimes.
Right.
So like I personally have a white cane. I use it when I go to the airport and when I'm in foreign places by myself or that I'm not sure of or with someone who might not know how to support me. But I don't use it in my everyday life. So you wouldn't know. And I think that's the hard thing about visual adaptations, as we're calling them. I really love that. But you really never know who's going through what because people learn to adapt and they learn to live with it. Mm-hmm. So maybe they don't use the same tools that everyone else uses to manage.
Yeah.
Not everyone should be treated equal. Everyone should be treated equitably.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just like making sure people have what they need to succeed the same way as everyone else, which is what I get at the airport. But technically, like, I don't need the stares and I don't need the negativity from other people, you know? And like, sometimes it is like people will assume I can't see certain things. So they like go above and beyond to help me. And like, you just really shouldn't make those assumptions. Like, just because someone has a white cane doesn't mean they're totally blind.
Right.
Like, that should never be your assumption when you see a white cane. You should probably ask that person, do you need my help, before you come over and grab their arm and start like steering them somewhere, you know? Because like,
right,
that can be very jarring, especially if I didn't have all my vision. That'd be even worse because I wouldn't know where I was going or who was guiding me. So I do think that the foundation's working hard to educate people on that, and I really appreciate that about them. But yeah, it's been a really great experience to not only like create something in my own vision and also meet people who were going through something so similar to what I went through, and maybe just like I can help them because I figured it out and they haven't. And I just love being able to reciprocate that back to people and like bring it full circle, you know?
Right.
Recently, Heather went to a low vision specialist and actually got some very exciting news.
I really didn't have any goal going into this appointment. I just hadn't seen a low vision specialist in 12 years. So I figured it was maybe time, especially if I'm presenting myself as the president of the Foundation Fighting Blindness. I felt like I almost needed to know exactly what I have, because it's always just been this like, we think you might have this, you might have that, we don't really know. It's just a general label at this point. And not really knowing exactly what it is or how it's going to progress in my life. So I went to this doctor, and it was the same the same doctor's office that I originally got diagnosed in. So I walked in and I was like, oh my gosh, like PTSD, you know, just like all these memories of like being there. And when I was diagnosed, it was about 2 days of full tests at 8 years old, and like people putting stuff in my eye and like probing around. And so it was a little jarring of an experience. And so when I went back, it was just so like an out-of-body experience almost to be there again. And so when I went and I saw the doctor, he asked me what my goal was. And I said, you know, I didn't really have one. And he said, well, how do you feel about driving? And I was like, floored, like absolutely floored. I was like, you must be joking right now. Like, what do you mean? And he said, no, I think you're a great candidate. So this actually just became legal in South Carolina pretty recently. And this doctor was, I might mess up my terminology, but he was actually on the committee that lobbied for this to become legal. So essentially what it is there's a biopic, and I'm so sorry I didn't bring it to show you, but there's a biopic, which is essentially like a monoscope or like a telescope that sits on top of your glasses. And so what you would do is divert your eyes to the telescope to be able to see distance. So like street lights, stop signs, street names, maybe like if there's a pedestrian, you know, you can watch them cross the road.
Ideally.
Something. Yeah, ideally. They should watch out for themselves, but whatever. As a pedestrian, I don't fully believe that. But anyway, so I would have to get tinted glasses because of my light sensitivity, and then the biopic would sit on top of those glasses. So I would essentially have to learn to kind of train my eyes to go between nearsightedness and farsightedness,
mm-hmm.
which I'm honestly pretty good at this point in my life, because I've always had to kind of find that focus for me, because sometimes like, if I really focus on something, I can't see it very well. But if I like kind of look away from it, I can see it better. It just depends on the object and the distance. So I would have to wear this biopic, go through 30 hours of training with this dedicated individual, And then I would have to pass the DMV test, which is the hardest part, in my opinion. But, you know, I've actually driven in like small neighborhoods before and in parking lots just because, one, it's fun and it like gives me that freedom that I lost when I was younger. So it's almost like I can actually do this, you know, like, no, I can't go wherever I want to go. But like, I'm proving to myself that I can do something that I thought I couldn't do. I'm just so happy that I've gotten that opportunity back in my life. Like the thing that caused me so much pain earlier on in my life and so much suffering, now I have that opportunity. And it's just like, I still can't even like fully explain how I feel about it. You know, I went through almost like the stages of grief whenever I found out, because it is like it's something I lost, and like now I'm being presented this opportunity again, but I have been told my whole life that it's something I'll never be able to do, and like just don't even think about it and like find other ways. And now it's like I was so angry for like a whole day. I was just furious at myself for like not doing the right things earlier, and then like mad at doctors for like making me think I was something that I wasn't, and even just like my friends and family for like a whole day for like not pushing me further, you know. And like, these are so irrational thoughts, obviously, but when we're going through grief, everything is a bit irrational. And now I'm almost like, I feel like I'm almost to the acceptance point. Hopefully. Yeah. I'm like tired of the emotional roller coaster here.
Yeah.
But it's just such a, it's just so mind-blowing, you know, to like be offered something that you never thought that you would be able to do.
Heather's life is a testament to taking control of your own life and health. She grew up feeling like she didn't fit in and was always told what she couldn't do. But she didn't accept that. She found herself and has learned she can do anything anyone else can. It just might be in a different way. And she teaches others that no one is limited. You just need to learn how to adapt.
If you've been inspired by this story or any others, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review.
Just get away at the beach, we get together. Because no matter what floats your boat, we're floating right along with you. With over 2,000 restaurants, live music all day and night, and endless attractions, Myrtle Beach was made for having fun and beaching easy. Welcome to 60 miles where you belong, the beach. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Plan your trip at visitmyrtlebeach.com.